you know, if you go back to that quote, creativity is intelligence having fun. If you ask me what I think the problem is today, is that we focus on the intelligence part. We don't focus on the fun part. And Einstein said it. So he didn't just say creativity is intelligence. And if you don't have the fun part, you probably won't have any creativity.
Where do great ideas come from? How can I hack my brain to get into creative flow? How do I flick the switch and get ideas on demand? How do I build a workplace culture that oozes creativity? I'm your host, Nicole Velick, head ideas girl at innovation and creativity company, The Ideas Bodega. We're going to dive into all facets of creativity. Welcome to Creativity Unpacked. Hello, everyone. I hope you're doing really well out there and Happy New Year. I am really excited to kick off 2024 with this episode. Today, I am speaking with the brilliant Damon Stapleton. He is a Chief Creative Officer and founder of the Monkeys Aotearoa New Zealand. I've been a huge fan of Damon and his work since I discovered his blog on creativity called Damon's Brain. Damon is a highly awarded and successful advertising creative. He's recognized as one of the top 20 chief creative officers globally, and he's won over 500 international awards. Cannes Lions, D&AD Pencils, Clio's, you name it, he's won it. Damon has worked on some truly incredible and really famous campaigns, like the Zimbabwean newspaper campaign, where the Zimbabwean trillion-dollar note became the advertising medium. And then there's the Samsung eye test, where they were actually able to get iPhone users to turn their phones into a Samsung. Sounds crazy, right? Well, we'll unpack those ideas in the episode. Damon is not only a brilliant creative, but he's also a really inspiring leader of creativity. And we're also going to talk a lot about what needs to be present for creativity to thrive in an organization. This conversation with Damon is just full of gems, and I just love this chat, and I really hope you do too. Okay, here's Damon. Hi, Damon. How are you going?
Good. Good to be here. How are you doing?
I am really, really good. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for asking.
So let's, you know, get right into it. So my first question is, can you tell me what is it that you do now?
What I do now is,
what's your role?
About 2.5 years ago, right in the middle of COVID, I decided to launch an agency with my partner, Justin Moday. So we've launched the Monkeys, which obviously anyone in Sydney, I think, will know the Monkeys. And we've launched the Monkeys Aotearoa in New Zealand. And we've been going for 2.5 years now. So that's my role.
Amazing. And how's it going?
I'm Chief Creative Officer. That's
my official title. Chief Creative Officer, yeah. And how's it going? Are you still in the infancy stage, or do you feel like you're well and truly into it?
No, I think especially this year, we've done well. We're at about 70 people now. So to go from 0 to 70 in 2.5 years, obviously that's not all creative people, but, you know, I think that's pretty good going.
That's great. And if I asked you what your purpose was, so behind the work that you do, is there a purpose driving you?
I would say it's, if you ask me what I think I do, is I try to keep ideas alive. I'm a bodyguard for ideas. How's that?
I really like that. I think if people had business cards these days, that would be your title.
Yeah, bodyguard, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, in the old days, they used to talk about creatives being rock stars, but I think we're much more like shepherds, you know, and we're trying to keep things going, trying to move them in a certain direction. And ideas now are really complicated, especially with very integrated campaigns. So I think that's what I spend a lot of my time doing is trying to say why an idea is a good idea.
Being the shepherd to carry it through.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you think about being a creative in advertising, what are the two things that you love the most?
Oh, I love the most. Oh, that's harder. I would say that what I've always loved about the business is there is just you can be in a room with one other creative, and just because your two brains are together, you can come up with something that no one else is going to come up with ever, just because of your experiences. And I've always found that really exciting, as you don't know what's going to happen when you all walk into a room. And I'd say the other thing is the variety. There's very few jobs where you can do, I think what I've done over my career and the kinds of experiences I've had, there can't be many careers that let you do that. So I'd say it's the variety and the possibility of what you can do in the business that I really love. Yeah.
I love that as well, where what you said about having two different, you know, brains with different experiences colliding and then forming something that will never be made elsewhere. And this is a hard question, but can you think in your career of a time when that happened just incredibly beautifully and something amazing was born?
It's happened a few times. I mean, often how it happens is somebody says, I know this is stupid, but that's how the sentence always starts. And they'll put something out there and somebody else will say something. And then 60 seconds later, it's not so stupid. I've done pieces of work. I mean, one of the most obvious ones is I did a thing in 2009, which was for the Zimbabwean newspaper, which was quite a big campaign back then when we made billboards out of real Zimbabwean currency. It's called the $1 trillion billboard.
It is an incredible campaign.
Thank you. There were five of us involved, and that happened because somebody had something on their wall and it had been sitting there. It was a drawing of a Zimbabwean dollar. It had been sitting there for weeks, and then one of us noticed it. And it just so happened, you know, because something I think was on the radio that day that made you notice it in a different way. You know, it's funny coincidences, which is why I often think creators have to all work together, because you don't get those coincidences just working from home. So we've been, for the last, you know, since we started, we've all been in the agency. But it's happened many, many times where somebody will say something, somebody will tell a story, somebody's making tea and somebody says something and then you saw something. And really, creativity is about staying open to those things and going, well, it'd be kind of interesting if you put those two things together, which often isn't what the corporate world is about. The corporate world is about being very linear and getting to an answer. One of my favorite quotes of all time is by the artist Paul Klee, which is, a line is a dot that went for a walk. And I think that's often how ideas happen, where these little things connect and then all of a sudden you're somewhere that you didn't know you were going to be. So for me, that's pretty special when it happens. It's kind of magical to see.
And I actually have later on in my notes a note to ask you about that campaign, the $1 trillion campaign, but you mentioned it. So can we dig a little bit more into that? Because it's so brilliant. Sure. And I think you guys got incredibly, like, heavily awarded for that campaign. I mean, it's a bit of a game changer, not a bit, but.
It was definitely a game changer for us.
So, and what's brilliant is what you said, that the genesis was a note on someone's wall. But can you bring it to life a little bit more? And even for people listening who don't know what that campaign is, can you talk a little bit about it and why it was so groundbreaking?
I'll try and do it without any visual aids. So basically, I ran an agency in Johannesburg called TBWA Huntler Scorus, which is quite a famous agency in South Africa. And we got phoned by a man called Wolf Mbangwa. And he was the editor of a newspaper called The Zimbabwean. And that newspaper, Robert Mugabe had put a 70% luxury tax on it because he was trying to get them out of business, basically, because he was critical of the government. So there was this really weird...
Sorry, Damon, what year was this?
I'm going to say 2008, 2009, somewhere around there.
Okay, yeah.
So you just think about it. Imagine you had to sell the Sydney Morning Herald in New Zealand. It's a pretty difficult job. So what he had to do is he had to sell the Zimbabwean newspaper in South Africa to stay afloat. So that's a pretty weird brief already. And he didn't have any money to pass. Well, the only money he had to pass was Zimbabwean dollars, which were completely worthless. They had just done the, I think it was the trillion, $100 trillion notes. So there was some insane amount of, you know, these banknotes they were printing. And
because of inflation or?
Yeah, inflation, corruption, government. I mean, it was a disaster. So there were four creatives and I. So it was Shelley Smoller, Raphael Baskin, Nadja Loscott, and Nicholas Hulley, and me. And this idea sort of started to germinate. It kind of started with, what if we gave out free money at the traffic lights as a flyer with a message on it? Because this money was worthless. And where it went was we started, so well, what if you made real posters out of real money? And then we went, what if you made a billboard out of money? And that was the thing. That was the visual that tipped it over the edge, because it was just the beginning of social media. It was the first time we understood that you could make one billboard in Africa, but the whole world could see it, which now is completely, that's normal. But at the time, it sort of spread across the world like wildfire. It was just after the GFC, so everyone was looking at things that were financial money. And it took on a life of its own. I mean, it won the Grand Prix at Cannes, it won a black pencil at DNAD, won awards around the world. But I mean, the thing was, when we started, it was just five of us going, well, I think this could work. And actually, that's the thing that you realize is you need a couple of people to believe in an idea. It's easy afterwards to say, oh, yeah, it's great. But at the time, nobody knows it's going to work. You just think it might work or it's interesting. And I think, you know, I was reading about in Silicon Valley, they've got this rule in some of the companies where you've got to keep an idea alive for 5 minutes. You can't kill it. You have to say why it's good. I've got a saying, which is, ideas are like goldfish, easy to kill. And what I mean by that is, in the first 30 seconds, if you work in a bad agency or a bad environment, any idea that's even a little bit interesting can get killed. And I think that's half the job, is how do you keep people open to stuff that is uncomfortable, doesn't make complete sense? That is a very big part of getting somewhere new or somewhere interesting.
Can I tell you my animal analogy for the same?
Go on. Yeah, go on.
The same thing. So I talk about how we can't kill ideas too quickly by saying that ideas, you'll like this because you're South African, right? So have
I was actually born in Australia, but.
Really? Okay, we'll come back to that. We're going all over the place. But you're South African and most probably you've been on a safari. Have you seen a giraffe being born?
Have I seen one being born? No.
Okay. But maybe, you know, on a nature documentary, when a giraffe is born, so this is my weird analogy, that a giraffe, a baby giraffe kind of plonks out.
Falls
out. And
it's
very lanky and it's like feet are like all over the place. And, you know, it takes time for the giraffe to kind of like walk and then be able to, you know, have a stride and run finally. And I always say, you know, you're not going to kill the baby giraffe. So that's my, so I like the goldfish as well.
Well, I think that's the truth though. In the beginning is you have bits of an idea or you have little strands, and that's when it's at its most vulnerable, because it's very easy. You know, I'll just give you an example. Most people, I think, who listen to this will have seen Cadbury Gorilla, which is a famous commercial. But imagine I came to you and I said, listen, we want to make an ad with a gorilla playing the drums, and we're going to use that to sell chocolate. In the ad, you won't see any chocolate. And we're also going to use Phil Collins as the track. Very few people are going to buy that. Very few people are going to think that's a good idea. And that's why you need to, you know, it's about creating enough people. You need to create momentum for ideas. You know, it's very hard to just walk into a boardroom and go, So we got this cool idea. What do you think? That's a very unnatural environment for our ideas to survive. So.
On that, you've just made me think of a question that I wasn't planning on asking you. Can you think of a time where you, I mean, and maybe you have to do this every day, but can you think of a time where you strategically thought about how you would sell a seemingly crazy or ridiculous idea to a client?
I have a story. So I used to work with a man called John Hunt. So John Hunt was the worldwide creative director for TBWA, and he was also one of the people that started Hunt Lascaris. So I'll tell you a story about how he sold a campaign to a bank. And for me, this is something also that's really important, is how you sell an idea and how you sell an idea to some to people that maybe aren't creative is a really great skill to learn if you want to be successful in advertising. So we were trying to do a $100 million campaign. It was for a bank. I won't mention the bank, but it was for a bank, which was in 30 countries. And he had to present to the board. So it's me, and I was quite young at the time. You know, I was basically shitting myself, you know, going into this boardroom with sort of lots of wooden panels and microphones and sort of older people that looked like my dad, you know. And John and I walked in there, and John only had one slide. And he put the slide up, and he said, I've put a whole lot of bank adverts up on this slide for you guys to look at. Can you guys see what's wrong with them? And the board of the bank stared at this for about a minute, and eventually they said, no, we can't see what's wrong with them. I said, so I've put five different ads from five different companies, and you can't see what's wrong with them. They go, no. He goes, I swapped the logos. So it's a very simple exercise, but they couldn't tell the difference between their advertising and all their competitors. And he said, so that's why you have to redo your brand. And they went, fine, got it. And that for me was
a smart way, really smart way of doing that.
It's a great way to explain why something's necessary. I mean, we often spend reams and reams of time and slides and pages trying to explain why something's true. But if you can make somebody feel something's true, that is a much more powerful way to do it. It's a much harder thing to do, but if you can think of a way to do that in a presentation, in my experience, that is a much better way to go. Logic is one of those things where people, even if they agree with you, still might not do it just because it's not empirical. It's just logical, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And this chat is becoming a little bit like a Quentin Tarantino movie, because now what I want to do is I want to jump back to the beginning and I want to ask you some of the very fun intro questions that I ask most of the guests on the podcast.
Cool.
So here we go. The first one is, if you could express yourself creatively where no one was watching and you had the freedom to be really crap at it, whatever this thing is, and it wasn't to make money, what would you do?
Probably maybe two things. I'd love to be able to sing. My dad was a singer. He was quite a famous singer. So I always wished I could sing. And I say the other one, if I really could do this, I'd pursue stand-up comedy. But I mean, I'm pretty sure I'd be crap at it. But, you know, if money's no object, that would be something that I would find really interesting to do.
Yeah. I don't know. There's this little part of me that's going, oh, maybe tell him to do it.
Give it a go. Yeah.
Look, well, you know, it's nearly January. So, you know, New Year's resolutions and all.
Yeah. Just, maybe I'll give it a go.
Just
one day.
Saying.
Yeah.
Okay. So another question. If you had a completely different career, nothing to do with advertising, what would you do?
That's tricky. I mean, before I was in advertising, I was a photographer. And, you know, that might be something I would still enjoy doing. Or be kind of interesting to be some sort of script writer. I think that would be interesting for me as well. You know, to write longer form film. I mean, I'm working on a short film at the moment. which I've been working on for a long time. But I mean, I'm pretty sure every creative director says that, so I'm being a cliche. But that's something that I'd be interested in doing. My son's studying film, so the dream would be the two of us make something together.
Oh, that would be beautiful. Well, I can't wait to watch it. You know, shepherding Damon.
me too. Yeah, I've got to get off my ass and get it done.
Okay, so I have two more. If you could jump on a plane right now and go to two places, where would you go? I chose two because two is easier than one, but you can just say one.
Well, no, I mean, it's kind of interesting. I would say I'd love to go to cities I've never been to. Because I've been to a lot of cities, but like, for example, I've never been to Berlin. So, you know, I'd love to go to a place and then just sort of immerse yourself. Oh, and I know the other one. Actually, it's obvious. I'd go back to Tokyo. Tokyo blew my mind. I did a 6-night shoot there. And Tokyo is just, it's not like anywhere else in the world. And most places are derivative, but Tokyo is completely original. Well, for me anyway. So I would say, let's go Tokyo and Berlin. Lock it in.
Yeah. Great. What is it, as a creative, what is it about Tokyo that you love? Like, how did it inspire you? How did it kind of set you, like, alight?
What I think it did was, and I think it's probably, I think travel does this, right? It just surprises you. And I think being surprised is... it unlocks things. So, you know, when you're in a place like that, every corner you walk around, you know, you'll see a Zen monk and somebody dressed as a manga character and, you know, like they're both smoking a cigarette. It's just like everywhere you look, there's crazy shit going on. And it makes you just go like, oh, okay. I think what it does is it just makes you go, well, there aren't any rules really. You know, and I think in your life, you get into sort of a pattern. And I think often what travel does is it breaks the pattern, which is what creativity does. It breaks patterns. So I think that's what it does.
Beautiful. I love that. I had exactly the same experience in Japan. So
yeah, it's just, yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
It's just a place full of insane juxtaposition of different things everywhere.
Yeah. And everyone sort of accepts it. It's just, so, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was great.
Yeah. Okay, so another question. This is a hard one. What is your favorite song of all time?
I would say Perfect Day by Lou Reed, which I love. And then there's a song I'm kind of fascinated with. I mean, I do get a little bit obsessed by lyrics and things. So there's a song by Donny Hathaway called A Song For You. And there's a lyric in it. And it's a lot to do with how you would write this lyric. So the lyric is, I love you in a place where there's no space or time. And what I find fascinating about that is I've listened to a lot of love songs, I've listened to lots of lyrics, but he was able to write something like that, or the writers were able to write something like that. And I just think it's so interesting how you can talk about the same thing over and over, and then one day somebody comes along and just writes about it in a slightly different way. And it sticks in your brain. So, you know, I do like AC/DC when I'm, you know, just wanting to jump around. But those are two songs that lately, there's another guy called Marcus King that I've been listening to as well. He's sort of kind of country, rockabilly kind of guy. So
that Donny Hathaway song, how does it go?
I can't sing it. I definitely cannot sing it. Do not do that to me, Nicole.
You said that you want to be. You said you want to be a singer.
Yes.
Now's your chance.
I could be. But
that's all right. It's just a cruel joke I play on my podcast guests, and some of them fall for it.
It's a beautiful song, and he died young. He died when he was 33, so he's a really interesting guy as well. So.
Okay, Damon, I'd love to ask you a little bit about your childhood. I find that our upbringing has a huge impact on our, what I call, creative confidence. And so it's really interesting to me to delve into people's childhoods and see kind of, you know, what were they nurtured into their creativity? Were they nurtured or educated out of creativity? So I have a few questions for you about that. Firstly, were you a creative kid?
I don't know if I was. I mean, it's a hard question to answer. I suppose I was, I mean, I had a pretty unique upbringing in the sense that I went to 16 schools and I moved around a lot. Like I went to school in Australia. I went to school in England. I went to school in South Africa. You know, I went to school all over the place. And I also didn't really live in houses. I grew up in hotels because my father was a hotel manager. So I think what that taught me was how to observe. You know, a lot of interesting stories happen in hotel lobbies. So I left Australia when I was 3 years old and moved to Botswana and then moved to South Africa. So we moved around a lot. So I think in a weird way, I suppose it was a creative upbringing in the sense that I was constantly moving and learning and seeing new things. I remember going to see James Bond movies on Saturday mornings. You know, like I remember the idea that there is another world beyond this world. And I think that was an important thing for me because, you know, you obviously you go to new schools, it can be tough, you can get bullied. You can, you know, the idea that there was this other world that could be created, I think you find that with a lot of creative people, is they used it as a way either to connect or communicate or maybe even seek solace. And so I think that for me was a big part of it, was that the creativity came from this, oh shit, well maybe there's another place, there's another world, there's another way that it doesn't have to be this way. And I think for creatives, that's a big starting point. It's either they're unhappy with the way the world is, or they realize the world doesn't have to be like that. And creativity can change things like that. That's its superpower. It can transform anything.
So how old were you when you settled in South Africa?
We moved to South Africa when I was about 4 or 5 years old. I moved around a lot in South Africa as well. So Cape Town, Durban, Johannesburg, some other places you won't know. And then lived in England for a while. And came back to South Africa. I was in Australia before I came to New Zealand. So, yeah, jumped around a lot.
During my stalk/research of you, I did come across, actually, it's in your blog. You have this amazing blog called Damon's Brain, which I've been following for a long time. And there is a beautiful entry where you talk about Rodriguez, aka Sugarman.
Oh yeah.
And that's where I was getting to with the South Africa
kind of. Oh right.
Yeah. I think you mentioned you grew up in Durban, right?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time in Durban. And Durban was, you know, I don't know. I think a lot of people have this feeling of, and maybe it's not just creative people, maybe it's all people. But if you grow up in a small town, or maybe you grow up in a place that you don't quite fit, you know, I think I was trying to be a goth for a while in 40 degree heat. I wasn't a surfer, which Durban's a bit like Brisbane. So, you know, it wasn't really sort of my kind of vibe. And I just had this feeling that I have to get out. I have this feeling, you know, I've got to go somewhere else. And I think what I talk about in the blog is the first time I heard Rodriguez was the first time I realized, like, there's probably other people that feel like that. And there's other people that, you know, it made me sort of go, okay, there is this other world and I can go there. So if you've seen the movie, he had a profound effect, Searching for Sugar Man. He had a profound effect on a lot of people my age because he was almost the antidote to the apartheid system. He made these two albums. I think they're called Hard Fact and Cold Fact. I think I might have that wrong, but and he was kind of like this complete mystery. A lot of music had to be smuggled into South Africa because there was a lot of sanctions. But this guy had always been there, but nobody knew anything about him. Nobody could find out any facts. No one knew. And I don't know where the rumor started, but the rumor started, there were two rumors. One is that he had shot himself on stage, And the other one was he had set himself on fire on stage and he was dead. And that was almost like, you know, it's like me saying to you, Elvis is dead, and everyone would just nod. Everyone accepted it. So yeah, I remember listening to
it. That was the way
that was the way it was. And so when I was 16, I was listening to his music. Fast forward 10 years, I was going with this girl whose father worked at Sony. And he said, you guys should come down to the, there's a place called the Blues Room. You're not going to be sorry. So we're like, he goes, no, seriously, come down. So we go down there and we're standing there and there's about 70 people. And the next thing, this guy walks on stage and starts singing. And I'm like, shit, that guy sounds just like Rodriguez. But everyone was still convinced it was an impersonator because he was dead. And then slowly over maybe three or four songs, you go like, okay, now this is him. Because you can't, you cannot impersonate that well. And that was the, I think it was a warm-up concert that he did before. If you watch the movie Searching for Sugar Man, which I highly recommend, he did that before he went and did his big concerts. I actually saw him in Sydney as well. I went to see him in Sydney when I was there because he's just one. I mean, I'm sure everybody has a piece of music or a musician that is really important to them. But I would say he was important to entire generation. Yeah, it's kind of a, it's a beautiful story, but it's kind of a tragedy that he's not as big as Bob Dylan, in my opinion.
How did this whole experience and Rodriguez impact you?
You know, what is so interesting about him is he tells stories. And I'm definitely not a musician. I became a photographer. But photography is about observing the small details, the little stories, the threads, the fabric. You know, as you walk down a street, there's 100 stories that are happening. And if you listen to Rodriguez, that's what he talks about. He talks about what he observes. So maybe he was one of the first people to make me understand that the power of observation could be turned into something creative or art. You notice things that maybe other people don't notice. You know, there's, what's the old saying? You're either on the dance floor or you're watching people on the dance floor. And I think a lot of creative people are watching people on the dance floor. You know, they're seeing what's going on. That's what I think introverts do. Introverts are maybe more aware of things than extroverts.
So, Damon, what is the most audacious idea that you've ever had and why?
When I was in New Zealand, I did a thing called the Samsung Eye Test with some creatives where we turned an Apple phone into a Samsung.
Do you know what, so Damon? I actually tried it out today.
Yeah, it's cool, huh?
It's, I mean, I would say that's more than audacious. I think that idea is just pure chutzpah. I absolutely love it. Can you just tell me like what it is and then let's kind of delve into that a little bit. Let's unpack that one because it's such a crazy, brilliant idea.
So first of all, just there were a lot of people involved in this, and I mean a lot of technology. There were a lot of digital guys involved, a lot of creative. So I'm by no means taking credit for this. I was there though. And
what's the idea?
The idea is that one of the greatest problems in the world when it comes to phones is if you got an Apple phone, you're never going to change. And actually, if you've got a Samsung, you'll probably never change. It's almost like your iOS or your, you know, it's like you're never the twain shall meet. And the joke was, once again, if somebody said, it'd be pretty funny if you could put a Samsung phone on an Apple. And everyone laughed.
Do you know what? I actually have in my notes to ask you, did that idea start as a joke?
Yeah. I mean, it started as a statement where somebody said that. And it was like, well, could that be done? And, you know, some really good creatives, Mike Felix, Brett Colliver, guys I used to work with, some amazing digital guys, worked on that for a very long time and made it happen.
So can you explain what it is? So how do you do it?
So basically it looks like an app. And when you click on it, it changes the face of your phone from an Apple phone to a Samsung phone, and then you can test drive it. It's got fully functioning games. It shows you all the different features. And if you think about that in terms of value, imagine I could get you to test drive a BMW even though you're in an Audi. You know, if you just think about that, that's essentially what we were able to pull off. Yeah, that won a DNAD Black Pencil, won gold at Cannes. And, you know, I think it's a piece of work where you need an environment where people are going to go on that journey for quite a while. Because to do things like that, you're trying to figure out stuff that's really difficult. And that goes beyond creativity. There's technological aspects to that as well. So, you know, the last agency I was at was very, you know, it gave people space to look at ideas like that and have enough time to figure out how to do them. Because that's not going to be in a book anywhere, I can tell you that.
No, and just even the space to allow someone to put time into something that at first would have seemed so incredibly ridiculous.
Well, it seemed impossible initially.
Mm. And today I did it. You know, I was researching you and I saw the idea, and I'm definitely an iPhone person. I've only ever had iPhones. I've always been curious, but I just am like, you know, you just get stuck, like you said. And the fact that I could experience a Samsung phone today on my iPhone was, it just blew my mind. Like, it's an unbelievably.
It takes away a lot of the fear, you know, because you actually have a fear that you're not going to know how to do things. So there was a guy, a creative technologist, I'm just going to give him a shout out. I don't know what he's doing these days, called Danilo Castillo. And he was kind of one of the key people that figured out how to do this. So amazing. All of those guys did an amazing job.
So it was really the culmination of all these brains and people from different kind of industries and experience.
Well, I think these days, you know, in the old days, you could do things in a more insular way. But I mean, it's an interesting point about creativity, right? Like, what is creativity these days? It is often how you bring things together. Like, for example, can creativity not... Like, I think creativity needs technology. They need each other. There's very few ideas these days that can happen sort of on their own. So I think one of the real tricks these days is, how do you bring different disciplines together to create something new? Which is, I mean, one of the reasons we got involved with the Monkees and Accenture Song is I believe that the way forward is not just, you know, advertising agencies didn't really change for about 50 years. I think there's got to be a new level of thinking in terms of how you bring those people together.
So Damon, just more on your own creativity, is there a project or idea that flopped, something you would rather forget about, and, you know, something that didn't work, and why? And what did you learn from it?
It's like therapy for me.
Well, welcome to my office.
Yeah, it's why I write the blog. So often what happens in advertising is you don't have enough time, or you don't have enough money, or, you know, there's a lot of pressure. And because of that, something can not go quite the way it should. So you might get the wrong actor. Maybe the director that you ended up getting was not actually the right guy for the job. You know, also, maybe your idea was shit. You know, that's more than possible. But there can be what tends to happen with these projects is there's a lot of things that happen along the way. So, you know, when I talked about my quote, a line is a dot that went for a walk, all the way through these processes, from the Zimbabwean to iTest to Penny the Pirate, there were lots of little decisions that had to happen, hundreds of decisions all the way along. If enough of those decisions are wrong, you're going to end up with a flop. And that's why it's so important to, you know, to not just assume things are going to work out. Because you can have an amazing idea, and this has happened to me, by the way, an amazing idea, an amazing director, everything's works, you know, on paper, but it doesn't work when you shoot it. So you have to almost like make the film or make the project every day. It's not a set and forget. So that would definitely be a big lesson in my career, where if you take things for granted, they'll bite you in the ass.
Beautiful. In your blog, you wrote, inspiration doesn't go anywhere, you just stop seeing it. And this was about your time in New York City. And I think why I remembered that is because you're in Greenwich Village at the time. Were you in Washington Square Park? I used to live very, very close, so I know that park very well. So, Damon, how can we still see it, inspiration? And, you know, what can we do? Why is it so important?
I mean, so the reason I wrote that is I wrote that blog, and there's a very famous creative who actually texted me and said, I can't believe all the shit that you see. I walk through there every day and I don't see it anymore because he lives there. And I think when you become jaded or you become cynical, which believe me is not an easy thing to avoid, because I think often you do that to protect yourself in this industry, you tend to start shutting down and you tend to stop seeing things. The thing that I would say is travel is so important because it lets you see things in a new way. But the other thing, and it's probably my favorite quote, Einstein said, creativity is intelligence having fun. And I think this idea of being able to play and seeing new things, it's almost the key to everything, which is, it's a hard thing to explain, but you need to be able to have stupid ideas, ideas that don't make sense. You need a space where you can do dumb shit. You need to walk to work the wrong way, or maybe moonwalk to work and see what happens. You need that to get somewhere new. So the problem is people are trying to make creativity logical, and creativity is not logical. Creativity is a leap. And so obviously people try and monetize creativity. They try and make creativity safe. But, you know, if you think about anything that's ever been created creatively, like punk, take punk in the 70s, that just came out of nowhere. It wasn't like a sort of special process. And I think, I think that's what sort of business has done to it. It's sort of made it very, they want it to be predictable. But the very power of creativity is it's the glitch in the matrix. It's not the matrix. That's the job of creativity. It's to disrupt, to break. So if you ask me why it's important, is that's the beginning. When you can see new things or you can play, that's the key to the door.
Beautiful. I love that because I think I had the same experience in New York when you know, I lived there for 4 years and I saw that happen to me as well, where at first, when I got there, everything was like new. I remember the first time I saw snow, I was sitting in a restaurant. I literally ran outside and started screaming, and my friends were so embarrassed.
But that's the power of those cities as well. Tokyo, New York, London, Paris. I mean, there's a denseness, right? And I think that's the trick. Like New York and Tokyo are similar, where there's just so much happening all the time. You're going to find something. Something funny will happen to you on the subway, or somebody will say something to you on the street, and that creates energy and it creates ideas.
Absolutely.
So that's why I think those cities are like these sort of little touchstones, I guess.
Mecca for creative inspiration. Absolutely. And I like what you said that, you know, we can't all jump over to New York or Tokyo or Paris, but there are things we can do in our own city, in our own lives to stay creative. And you know, you mentioned like walk a different way, or you know, what are some other things that you do to stay, I guess, inspired?
I ride a motorbike. There's a very famous book called Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, and that book is all about being in the moment. So I think when you're on a motorbike, you have to be in the moment. And so for me, I like doing that because it just makes me sort of take note of what's around me. I do all sorts of things, but I think it's more like your approach. You know, even if you go to a boring shopping center, it can still be funny. You know, you can, I don't know. I think it's much more like what's going on in your head than what's out there. It's how you respond to things. And I think that's where, I think that's what I find so interesting about comedy. Like how somebody, you know, you take something like Ricky Gervais' The Office. Like, it's the most boring, sad, depressing place in the, you know, in the world, Staines, you know, it's terrible. And he turned that into something that's really funny because he was able to see the story and he's able to see the humanity. Yeah, you don't need to go anywhere special. I think it's much more about how you look at the world. Like, what's your perspective? I think a lot of the problems today is that, you know, social media tells you what your perspective should be. Whereas I actually think you should just have your own. And what worries me is that you're going to have a lot of people that are they still able to think for themselves? And I think that's going to be an interesting question over the next 20 or 30 years. You know, are you going to just be told what to think?
Earlier this year, you wrote a brilliant article in Campaign Brief, and it was called Creativity and the Value of Effing Around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it really struck a chord with me because firstly, I love John Mayer. And actually, interesting fact, John Mayer and I had the same songwriting teacher who is my claim to fame, who was an amazing...
So come on, Nicole, sing some of his songs for me.
Well, another time. Maybe when we do the next podcast, David, then I'll do it. A brilliant man called Pat Patterson. And I think that John must have been Pat's best protege because Pat would reference John Mayer and his songwriting a lot in the workshops. And I also love the article because you included a video of John Mayer that I hadn't seen before. It's John Mayer basically showing this guy how he gets ideas, and he's just there with his guitar and he's what we call noodling, but like he's literally just playing and then he's forcing himself to sing and actually come up with lyrics, you know, whatever comes out. And he calls it stupid brave. Damon, can you talk a little bit about the importance of being stupid brave, and how does that relate to you and, you know, maybe creatives in advertising?
Yeah, I think
it's
a big question, but I'll give it a go. I think so. First of all, I'm definitely, you know, John Mayer's obviously a genius, but I think in the video, what you see him doing is trusting his skill and trusting the process. And I think he doesn't know what's going to happen. He's just going along. And then as things happen, he's developing them and building them. And all of a sudden, there's a little song or there's a little phrase or there's a little line. When he says stupid brave, it's really scary to do that. It's really scary to not know what's going to happen. And it's really scary to just think, well, you know, you can start going, what if I don't come up with anything? Or what if I look like an idiot? Or what if I'm embarrassed? But he's brave enough to just bypass all that and give it a go. And then all of a sudden, you saw in the video, things start happening. And one of the reasons creatives have teams in ad agencies is really great teams support each other. Really bad teams tear each other to pieces, which I've seen as well. But when you have a really great creative team, it's almost like improv. So I think the rule for improv is yes and, right? So you can never say no. You have to build on what the other person says. So if I say, I'm an alien, you would go, well, you're an alien, but you're also wearing a top hat. And then I would say, that's because I'm going to a wedding. And you'd say, you know, like, so that's almost like how you build ideas. And I think that's what John Mayer was showing you, is that if you put yourself out there and you've got the right people or the right skill around you, all of a sudden you can be in a place that you had no idea you were going to be. So I didn't really know I was going to talk about an alien wedding with a top hat. But it's kind of an interesting thought, you know. So you have to just stay open to that and trust that you'll get somewhere. But it's scary. It's scary because if you're having a bad day or you're not feeling particularly good about yourself. So I think that's why I think it's really good sometimes for creatives to have another creative. It's a very hard thing. You know, it's very hard to write a book by yourself. It's very hard to write a song by yourself. So I think the team thing, especially in advertising, is quite useful.
And how can leaders nurture a stupid, brave culture if it's not there?
So I think it's a lot to do with what the culture of the company is. There's some companies I don't think will ever be creative because I don't think they're prepared to change their culture. I think if you really want to be creative, you have to have space for dissent. You have to have time to have stupid ideas. You have to not be that interested in hierarchy and much more interested in things being new. In my experience, there are a lot of companies that try to pretend that they're being creative, or they're trying to pretend that they're being innovative. But if you actually look at what they're doing, many of them aren't actually changing anything. So, you know, the thing about creative is it's scary, it's dangerous, and, you know, if you do it, you can get massive results. Maybe the question is, if you don't do it, maybe that's more dangerous.
And have you ever had to come into an organization and change that?
I've worked at agencies that were not creative. That's a very bad place to be if you're an advertising agency. I've definitely worked with clients where there's some companies that are so self-absorbed, shall we say, that I don't think they're capable of taking on new ideas. I think it's a real interesting question. Like, how do you take on new ideas? Who's going to champion them? Who's going to keep them alive? Because once you start putting them into, you know, big cultures, there's 100 reasons not to do something. Give me any idea in the world, I'll tell you why you shouldn't do it. But you need somebody who's going to fight for it. Because I think ideas die if no one believes in them. And the thing is, belief's a very sort of fluffy word in the corporate world. But you need it. You know, everyone referenced Steve Jobs. Every presentation you ever go to, you've got a Steve Jobs quote. I mean, he was obsessive about ideas. You know, he was focused. He believed in what he was trying to do. I think it's a really important aspect of how you make an idea real, or how do you make it happen? Because it's hard. It's easy to write something on a piece of paper, you know, but if you want to make it, that can be a year of your life.
On another podcast that you were on, a lovely guy that you've worked with introduces you by saying that you created such a safe place. He said, an atmosphere where people are allowed to be wrong, unconfident, scared. Can you tell me, like, why do you do that and why does that matter? I think it's a similar thing to what you were just saying.
Yeah, his name's Stuart Turner. He's a creative director in Sydney. He very kindly did that. Why did I do that? I do that because I don't think fear and creativity can live in the same place. And I think that if you're afraid, you're not going to put yourself out there. So I've worked, and trust me, I've worked in creative departments where people are afraid. You know, they're afraid of the boss, or they're afraid of what people are going to say. So then what happens is you do what's not going to get you in trouble. And you're going to do that. Do what's going to make everything okay. But to be really creative, you have to be a little bit unreasonable. You know, I think the old quote that all progress depends on the unreasonable man. I think that's George Bernard Shaw. You have to want to change what's there. You have to say, no, this is shit. We can make it better. This has got to change. We can do this differently. That makes a lot of people uncomfortable. But to have those ideas, you also have to create a space for creatives to be afraid and unreasonable and say dumb shit. If you don't do that, I don't care who you are. If you don't do that, you're never going to get anywhere new. You're just going to, what I call pretend ideas. You get pretend ideas, which are, you know, things that you put on post-its and pretend that are, you know, real ideas, but they're not.
Are there any rituals that you have at the Monkees or even in past agencies you've worked at to nurture and inspire creativity?
I'm quite, shall we say, cynical about beanbags, posters, you know, things like that. Most of the great creative departments I've ever worked in, I wouldn't say that there were rituals. I would say there was a very, very almost obsessive standard in terms of what you're trying to do, but there was a total acceptance of anything inside the creative department. So you could be as, you know, you could be pretty disgusting. You could say rude things. You could make jokes. You could, and that space, I wouldn't call it a ritual, but there was a sort of understanding that when you came into that space, you could say anything. And I think that's what Stuart means, is that he felt like he could say anything or do anything. And I mean, I just believe that's how you come up with better ideas. So, I mean, I'm being quite selfish, I guess, as to why I do it. But I think there are a lot of places that want to be creative, but they've got all these rules. And I just don't think those two things gel together very well.
Have you had a boss yourself that was really great at nurturing creativity and did anything? And is there anything you can recall about a boss that you've had?
Yeah, I mean, I've had different bosses. I mean, I mentioned John Hunt. I had a boss called Louis Gavin. You know, the other would have enthusiasm for the idea. So, you know, I think just going like, this is great. Like, this is unbelievable. You know, we've got to make this. Just saying that to a young creative changes their life, changes their world. Just that level of enthusiasm. And the other thing is expecting a certain level, always pushing, always trying to be better. I think that was something that was instilled in me at Hunt Lascaris, is like, you can always push, you can always make it better, you keep going. And I think that was, it taught me that there's, you could have a company that had an ethos of creativity. You know, there are a lot of places, I think, that don't have creativity at their center, and they always talk about being creative and having creative ideas, but I think it's rubbish. I don't think it's true at all. I think it's just something they say. But when you work at a place where you really feel like you can be creative, it's a game changer. It's almost like the way I would describe it is, if you speak to most creatives in advertising, they've all worked in one agency where it felt like it was their home. It felt like home. It felt like they belonged there. And I think for creatives, belonging is a very big thing, because most of the time they feel a bit like a fish out of water. So if you can create a space where people feel like they can be themselves, that's, you're going a long way to success, I think.
And how does writing your blog help you? Is it because it just gets your thoughts out of your head? Does it help you get ideas? What's the purpose behind Damon's Brain?
So I've been writing it for 10 years now. 250,000 people have read it. I started writing it because I felt like everyone would talk about creativity, but they were not creatives. So I didn't feel like anyone who actually makes stuff for a living was writing about creativity. This is back in 2014. So that's why I started. And it was probably also a little bit of therapy for me. I was in probably the best space. I just wanted to see if other people felt the same way. I just wanted to know, hey, this is what I do for a living. Do you guys also go through this shit? Do you think like this? Am I mad? You know, that's sort of how it started. And then what it became was almost just an exploration of, you know, maybe it started off as a bit of a rant of what was wrong with advertising. But I suppose as it's matured, it's become more of an exploration as to what I think creativity is, or what it could be and what it can do, and also why it's valuable. I think it's incredibly valuable because it's such a difficult thing to define. I think the word creative is a really dangerous word, because it encompasses so many different things. You know, in the corporate world, people don't say creative, they say innovation. Because that's a better grown-up word. But at the end of the day, creativity, you know, you find it almost in every discipline, which is why it's such a difficult thing to define. So people know they need it. They just don't know what it is. So it's a weird thing. So that's how the blog started. And now I suppose it's become a bit of a, it's sort of like a, it's my methadone. If I don't write every 2 or 3 weeks, I get a bit itchy and scratchy. You know, I get a bit. It's a strange thing now. That's just something I have to do. I try to write only when I have something to say, because I did go through a period where I was writing every week, and I think I wrote some really bad blogs. So now I'm a little bit more, I just take a bit more time trying to find something to talk about.
And do you ever find yourself in a creative rut? Like where you just, the ideas are not flowing? And if so, what do you do?
Well, in advertising, you don't have that luxury. You know, you, what do they say? Inspiration is for amateurs. Professionals just show up. So I think in an advertising space, you've just got to find a way. I definitely have had a creative block when it's come to my blog, though, where I've just like, I have nothing to talk about.
And if so, what would you just wait? Or like, let's say you had to write something, what would you do?
So what I tend to do is often I've learned my process when it comes to the blog is I wait for strands to happen. So I wrote a blog the other day about Taylor Swift. I don't know. I saw that story and then there was another thing I saw and then all of a sudden it just smacked together in my head. But you've kind of got to give it the time to happen. So now I just wait. I wait. I know it'll happen. I don't worry about it. It'll happen. But it'll happen when it's right.
Okay, we're nearly coming to the end. For anyone that's feeling creatively uninspired or they're in a bit of a creative rut themselves, what advice do you have for them? And can you give the listeners a bit of a creative challenge?
Well, maybe they're the same thing. Maybe they're the same thing. I would say that if you're in a creative rut, you know, it's interesting. We talk about deadlines and we talk about, you know, outcomes and stuff. Maybe my challenge is do something where you don't care what the outcome is and you do something that you just do for fun. Nothing has to happen. You don't have to win anything. There's no prize. Just do something, and it doesn't matter how bad it is. I bet you you'll feel better at the end of it. So whether it's recording a song or drawing something or just do something because you enjoy doing it. And I think everything we do now, you know, it's almost like measurement has become more important than what's being measured in advertising and in our world. I think the things that I always try to do is do something where there's no outcome. And I think that's often how you get out of a rut. If you tell someone they have to write 500 words a day or 1,000 words a day, that's when they get stressed. If I say, write a story that just makes you laugh, people probably could do that, you know? So I think...
So that's the challenge we're throwing out to people.
Yeah, do something for fun.
Just do something for fun, something creative that's just fun with no care about, you know...
Well, I don't think, I know this is the weird thing, right? Creativity, yes, it can solve problems and make things more efficient. But, you know, if you go back to that quote, creativity is intelligence having fun. If you ask me what I think the problem is today is that we focus on the intelligence part. We don't focus on the fun part. And Einstein said it. So he didn't just say creativity is intelligence. And if you don't have the fun part, you probably won't have any creativity.
Beautiful. So do something fun, do something creative, do something fun.
See where it goes. The John Mayer thing, right? See where you go. Just see where you go.
Damon, thank you so much. I've just got three short, sharp questions for you to finish up about sure. creativity. So why is creativity important in individuals?
Because it makes life better. I mean, when you see something surprising, you see something you didn't think you were going to see, it just makes life better. I don't know. I don't know if that's a good answer, but that's mine.
That's a great answer. And why is creativity important in workplaces?
Because it has the ability to completely transform your reality in ways that almost nothing else in the world can.
Beautiful. And lastly, why is creativity important in the world?
Because I think I'll tell you one quick story. There's normally like a belief that there are only two ways to do things. You know, the world's quite binary. And I think what creativity does is it gives you the opportunity to find another solution. So, for example, there's, I don't know if you remember, about a year ago in America, they were pulling all these statues down in the South because they were seen as racist or whatever. In Bulgaria, they had a similar problem. They had all these Russian war monuments. And instead of keeping them or pulling them down, what they did was they painted them so that they looked like American icons like Elvis and Santa. And so they kind of just repurposed what those statues were. And I think that's a really good example of what creativity can do. Instead of pulling them down or keeping them, you just change them. And I think that's what creativity can do better than just about anything. It can change things in ways that almost nothing else can do. That's why I think it's important. There's another one. I'll just give you one other example. If you look it up, there was Trump was building his wall, and these architects came up with these seesaws that you could have across the border that children could play on, which was a kind of a protest, but it was just such a beautiful idea. And I think that's what creativity can do. It can solve things without anyone getting hurt.
Beautiful. I love that idea. I follow that artist on Instagram. He's amazing.
It's one of my favorite ideas I've ever seen, so it's great.
But lastly, if someone wants to find you, you may not want them to find you, but maybe find your work, where can people find you?
Damonsbrand.com. You can check that out. A lot of my articles end up on Campaign Brief, or, you know, I'm on LinkedIn and all the other social platforms. And I mean, if you're in Auckland, look me up. I'll buy you a beer.
Amazing. Damon, thank you so much for your generosity and all the beautiful storytelling. I've learned a lot and, yeah, really appreciative. Thank you so much.
Cool. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning in. To make sure that you never miss an episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and hit subscribe. And while you're there, please leave me a quick rating and review. I hope that you have found this episode inspiring and taken something out of it to help you get creative. If you do, let me know. Until next time.